Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
And thanks for being with us again on a Thursday. My guest this evening is just a fascinating guy. He's a British man who wrote a book on the New Age, but it's a New Age spoofopedia. So we are going to have some fun with humor and making fun of all the stuff that I do all the time. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. I will post the details of the particular TED presentation that I just watched, and unfortunately I don't have the name of the gentleman who did it, but it just had some fascinating information. All of us have probably observed in life that certain people get a lot of attention, and especially certain men get a lot of attention from women. And it's like, well, what exactly is that about? And part of what they were talking about in this presentation was the biology of that. Men have 20 to 50 times as much testosterone as women do, which everybody is pretty aware that it's dramatically more. And part of what that means is the more testosterone you have, the more you take risks, or you're prone to taking risks, and the more you think about sex and have sexual urges. No surprise there. What's interesting is that when a man becomes a focus of attention, becomes powerful, so that could be a politician, it could be a rock star, it could be a leader in industry, it could be a TV or radio personality. But as soon as that man has that kind of attention, becomes famous and gets that kind of attention, their testosterone level rises. Interesting. So they start taking more risks and they start thinking about sex more. Well, here's the part that totally blew my mind. Women who are in the presence of men who are famous or powerful will also have a rise in testosterone. And that means they're willing to take greater risks, and they suddenly are thinking about sex with the guy who initiated that increase in testosterone in their system. So for all of those people who have always wondered why girls go for the bad boy, or the women who are going, why do I choose these guys? There's biology behind this. There's, you know, it's the alpha male thing. It's the one who was the leader of the pack, was fighting for protecting the community, but that was also protecting all the females in the community and being the one that bred more of the females. You know, we can look at it from that evolutionary perspective, but let's look at it from a social perspective and a spiritual perspective. We're all, if we're on a spiritual path, whatever that looks like for you, saying that we want to live our lives in a different way, live it from conscious focus, live it from a spiritual perspective, or whatever term you're using. And I'm sure Jerry Thompson will have things to say about each of those phrases. But in spite of that, under certain circumstances, we do things that we do not understand. And some of those things that we do are some of those feelings that we have to do with sexuality. And here is a biological piece of important information about how all mammals are wired, but certainly how humans are wired, which is it's all about testosterone levels, and that the social setting and the position in that social setting of both a male and the females around them does this unconscious biological thing that makes people take risks and have sex with each other. Boy, does that explain a lot. And one of the things that he said in his talk was, make sure you tell all your teenage children but this is how it works, so that they won't be surprised and that they will understand it and they can make choices about it. You can walk away when you know it's stupid. So I'm sitting here still with my head spinning about yet another little-known fact that everybody should know that puts all kinds of things in perspective. And that's today's metaphysical musing. And now we will be even more amused by today's guest, Jerry Thompson. Jerry, you with us?
I'm with you, David. Good evening. Nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. I know you're from the UK, but I don't know exactly where.
Well, actually, I'm from Ireland, actually. So sometimes I don't think of myself as British. Sometimes I do. It depends what the context is and what the benefit is and the advantage.
Well said.
My humor is probably Irish, I would say.
Well, it also has that dry British tone to it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which I certainly enjoy. So just so people can get an idea, the name of your most recent book is A to Z, which is Astral Sex to Zen Teabags, an illustrated New Age spoofopedia. And the cover cartoon is a woman looking in the mirror saying, "Tomorrow I will start living in the present." I found myself last weekend sitting and reading aloud to my girlfriend as the two of us laughed hysterically at some of the things that you wrote. So tell me a little bit. I don't know anything about you. I don't know how you got here, what your path as an author was, what your path spiritually is, because obviously to spoof all this stuff, you had to be around it. Tell me.
Yeah, that's right. I've been around it. I started my professional life as an architect, but I dropped out of that because I realized I was kind of more interested in people than buildings. And I went on a trip around Asia and the Himalayas, and a kind of spiritual experience, really, which opened up a lot of a different world to me, a different, you could say, the mind, body, spirit, or new agey kind of realm, you know, which was in the late 1970s. I went to countries you can't go to now, really, like Afghanistan, Iran, and Burma. And it, you know, when I came back, my life was completely different. I got involved in what I now call macro neurotics. I did all that brown rice and seaweed stuff, and still do to some extent. I joke about it now, but that was the kind of way into the spiritual realm. So I was vegetarian, I was vegan, really, in those days. And then I went to live in Boston, where around Michio Kushi, who is a great leader of the macrobiotic movement. And then I was headhunted by his Western counterpart, Herman Ihara, and I lived in California for a while. Then I really got into New Agey stuff. I kind of went for every kind of reading you could have, every kind of guru, every kind of training, workshop, treatment, healing, you know, in the book, kind of just searching around for some kind of meaning or understanding or path. And I ended up being a Buddhist, really, which I am now. Mm-hmm. And so in the middle of all that, encountering that stuff, I could always see there was a funny side to it. And I used to write about it for magazines. I don't know if you know East West Journal. I was actually on the staff of East West Journal for some years. And I would write humorous stuff. So I was always, the things that are good and beneficial, I always look at the funny side and kind of not taking it too seriously. So I suppose that's the story of how. So the book gradually got written in bits, and then Findhorn Press wanted to publish it. It's got cartoons as well. I must mention the lovely cartoons of my friend Anne Ward, who's also an Irish woman living in England. And those greatly embellished the book as well. We did those kind of jointly. I did the words and she did the lovely line drawings.
Yep. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm looking at one right now where a man in a sweater is meditating, looking very, very serious. And it says, "I am open to happiness. I am open to prosperity. I am open to a perfect new relationship. I am open 24 hours a day."
I think what gets me is, like, people do say things like that, but without realizing how the language of New Ageism, I suppose it used to be called mind, body, spirit, you know, that side of spirituality. I think people talk this stuff, and like any field of jargon and specialized language, it gets a bit ridiculous, and people speak in a kind of coded vocabulary which is accepted, just like young people nowadays, you know, use terms like, for instance. You have to put like at the end of everything. You have to go up at the end of each sentence as you speak, like you're asking a question. There are these conventions, and the ones that I detected in, you know, the new agey realm of communication were, I think, what I found most hilarious, really. I remember being with my girlfriend, now wife, maybe 20 years ago, walking along the seafront in England and bumping into one of these New Age voyagers and asking her how she was. And she said, "Oh, I've been on a long, dark journey," you know, and went into this kind of this gobbledygook, as we call it here, and not realizing that she wasn't really using real language like a normal person. So I've kind of parodied that area of communication. And there are in the book, the book is like a tongue-in-cheek guide to the sort of things you can say if you want to sound really superficial and daft, you know, and specialized areas like there are coded things people say, and there's a kind of subtext of what those really mean, you know. I think I'll quote some. If somebody says, "My life is really working now," you know, there's a good chance that they're in a bit of a mess, you know, and they're going from crisis to crisis. And I sympathize with people who are going from crisis to crisis, and I hope they're finding methods that help them get out of crisis. But there is often this, you know, people who talk about relationship, "Oh, we're really working out our problems now," you know, like but tomorrow they'll be back. And I think one of my favorite cliches that people use is, "I really hear what you're saying," you know, which is a kind of counseling term. And that usually means, "I can't get a word in edgewise. I wish you would stop talking so that I can say something." You know, there's I think the area of romance and sexuality is another very fertile area. I enjoyed your lead in that kind of rather worrying for those of us who are a bit older and not powerful and not so testosterone laden. And I thought that phenomenon of irresistibility, which I thought you could term the Clinton effect.
Well, definitely he's the person you would think of first with that kind of thing.
Well, what also occurred to me was bankers are doing that. They say bankers are doing that. They're getting very testosterone-y, and they're taking risks with the world's economy, you know, making stupid decisions. And stockbrokers, you know, they're all charged up by this, you know, very hyperactive energy, you know, and testosterone. And, you know, I think it's having an effect, and that's very bad for the world. But if I just get back to a couple of dating and romance sayings and the kind of coded message that they really mean. So if someone says, you know, you meet somebody, you know, in the organic vegetable shop and they say to you, I really like where you're coming from," that kind of means maybe we can get together sometime. And if somebody says, "I have this really strong feeling that we met in a past lifetime. That means I'd like to have sex with you. If they say my soulmate really doesn't understand me, that means I'd very much like to have sex with you now, if possible. But if they say I'd very much like to have sex with you, that's not about sex. That's just to kind of show you that they're very kind of liberated, evolved, and on a very high spiritual plane. So you need to know these codings for the things people say. I mean, right. most of this is kind of exaggerated versions. I do exaggerate sometimes, and I'm a bit hard on people sometimes. But well, mostly it's done in affectionate good humor.
Well, exaggeration is one of the keynotes of good humor. And, Mark Twain said, I think it was Mark Twain, said, the best hamburger is made from sacred cows. So,
yeah.
So,
I love his, you remember his famous bon mot about reports of my death are greatly exaggerated.
Yes.
My demise,
yes.
Greatly exaggerated. That's, people use that all the time.
Yeah, it's, looking at what people are pretentious about hold to be very important and very serious, and laughing at it makes them a little crazy, but in the best meaning of the word, lightens things up. So that people can actually take a look at what's really going on and not be totally involved in the jargon and their, what can become a make-believe world, not about what they're attempting to do with their lives, but what they think and say about it.
Yes, I think there's a bit of a trap for people who are into this kind of spiritual stuff, because people can... It can become a bit unreal, as you're suggesting, and people can forget their humanity and human imperfection, really. And we don't have to be perfect. We just need to be real and try and deal with our issues, And I have a favorite topic of. Of imperfection, one of the things that people who are meant to be all love and light and lentils, and very lovey-dovey with each other, actually still have feelings of bitterness and envy and jealousy and not wanting other people to do well sometimes, And so I kind of created or detected a kind of selection of mind, body, spirit things people say to those who are feeling bad, which are ostensibly to make them feel better, but actually you want them to feel worse, people say these annoying things like, oh, I had an intuition that something like this was going to happen.
Oh, yes.
Intuition is one of those words. Or you can say to them, sometimes things have to get worse before they get better. These kind of condescending, patronizing and annoying things are, how did you manage to manifest this?
What is it
trying to teach you? In our darkest moments, we find our brightest treasures. Well, most bitter of all, it's just your karma. There's nothing you can do about it. I kind of relish those, really.
All of which are ways of saying, I really don't have anything to contribute to this situation, I feel like I should say something, so I'm going to pull something out of a conversation or a book and throw it at you to make myself feel better, but it won't make you feel any better.
And make me look good. It'll make me look good, better than you, because although there's suffering going on, I'm showing that I'm above it all. Which, if you're talking about karma, is a very good way of inviting trouble.
Indeed. So I flipped through the book quickly to find some of the ones that we were laughing about over the weekend. And one of my favorites was the definition of assertiveness, which is a pretentious term for being rude.
You met people like that? Are you one of those people?
Hopefully not. But, and another one, education, a system designed to reduce the creative and imaginative capabilities of children so they can be better able to cope with the disappointment of adult life. I think, having been a teacher, I think it goes even further than that, but that's just exquisitely put.
I think that is a bit bitter and harsh. Education can be like that. But, I mean, on the other hand, I'm an educator myself. I like to counsel and support and coach people in getting their lives to work better. And you know, education can be done. So I think you know, the occasional reader I've come across does think, oh, this is all too bitter and harsh, and, you know, we shouldn't laugh at this stuff. But I think you and I and most of the readers know that it's actually good to laugh, because I notice almost all the spiritual teachers I can think of, you know, the great spiritual teachers, you know, including Mr. J. Christ, you know, all seem to have used humor in their, you know, the New Testament. There's kind of word plays reported. And I think the great teachers I've studied with all use humor in a very, very heightened way as part of learning.
Well, one of the things that occurred to me, having been in the presence of a couple of people that I really felt were enlightened, is that somebody who is enlightened will always have a smile on his face that says, you know, I get the joke, and I'm not sure that you're quite there yet. And they don't talk much. So, no. You know, one of my jokes is, I guess I'm halfway there, because I certainly get the joke, but I can't shut up.
Well, if you're a radio talk show host, you know, it's going to be difficult to go quieter and quieter. Maybe as you become more enlightened, you'll say less and your guests will say more.
Well, you're doing a great job of taking care of that for me, Jerry.
Yeah, so are you. Yeah.
So this is one of several books that you've written. Tell us a little bit about the others.
Okay. I've done a variety of books in the realm of mind, body, spirit, but also in the area of humor. So I wrote another humorous book, which was about human relationship, and it was called Cats Are from Venus, Dogs Are from Mars. Which is a sort of, it's actually not about dogs and cats, it's about men and women. Right. I kind of noticed one day, hang on, in the way they behave and in the way of relationships, aren't women a bit like cats and aren't men a bit like dogs? And isn't the relationship between cats and dogs very Venus and Mars, you know, like different species can't understand each other, fight a lot, you know, different mindset and so on. So I set out to write a book that commented on human relationship and especially romantic relationship and the cat-like qualities of women, you know, and the dog-like qualities of men and how they treat each other, that's done very well, actually. That's still in print, but unfortunately in the US, the enlightened publisher in the US was too scared of litigation or legal suing by Mr. Gray, I suppose, to call it Cats Are From Means, Dogs Are From Ours, and so chose to call it, I think, a poorer title, which was, let's see if I can remember, All Is Fur in Love and War. And I think unfortunately missed out on a very catchy, you know, once you say that UK or European title for the book, everybody gets it. Everybody knows immediately what the book's about. So they lost out on that. But it's still in print, you know. So customers might be able to find that off Amazon or somewhere.
Yep. We're coming up to the break. I want to make sure people know how to find you and find your books. What's your website?
My website is Jerry with a G, Maguire Thompson. Maguire is Maguire, Thompson has an H and P in it, Thompson, .com, jerrymaguirethompson.com. I have another website, sorry to speak over
That's
you there.
Okay.
I run a business called Positive Comedy, which is training and coaching based on using comedy and improvisation, and that's simpler address, positivecomedy.com.
Fantastic. We'll give that again later in the show, but I wanted to make sure that people had a chance to get all the information right now. So we're going to be going off to a break, and we will be back in a few minutes and have some more fun with Jerry Dobson here on The Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Stay with us.
A cat, and have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
License and registration.
But I'm walking.
Do you want to upset an officer of the law?
No, sir.
Good. I pulled you over today for littering.
I didn't litter.
Wow. That's what they all say. Unfortunately, I saw you drop a pair of thunder thighs a few blocks back. Probably happened as you were biting into that apple you're holding.
How'd you know they're my thunder thighs?
Well, my young friend, I'd like to say 2 years in the police academy helped figure it out. But between us, it was smallstep.gov.
Smallstep.gov?
Yep-a-rooney. It's this site with tons of easy ways to lose weight. Some steps are so easy, people don't realize they're doing them. Like you taking small step number 83, snack on fruits. Go to smallstep.gov, you'll see. You can drive off now.
I'm still walking.
Take a small step to get healthy at smallstep.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department
Sassy.
Of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg. Ha ha, I win. Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with humorous Jerry Thompson from the UK. And you had mentioned just before the break that you also teach comedy from a spiritual perspective, and that just sounds like great fun.
Yes, it is fun. Part of my work is being a stand-up comedian, and in some evenings, weekends, and I use methods from the world of comedy and from the world of improvisation, which I think is just a brilliant way of developing yourself. Exciting and fun, scary, but great. And I use those to help people. Some of my clients want to be more funny, and a lot of them want to actually be able to present themselves and or even speak and do public speaking in a more confident, effective way. And that may include humor. It may be, you know, they talk too fast. I work with whatever's going on with people. But my background in, I mentioned microbiotics earlier, my background in sort of health counseling and healing work with people, which I didn't mention, I think, and counseling really altogether is very helpful, you know, just to try and find out what's holding people back and help them on. So, and it goes to a corporate level. I do some corporate work with companies who would like me to come in, run a team building day, help a team with stuff that's, and use comedy and improvisation as my toolkit, really.
Mm-hmm. And so is this mostly in the UK and Ireland or all over the...
It would mostly be UK and Europe, but I do work sometimes in the States, and I'm open to invitations to work. I'll maybe be doing, you know, a tour in the future. But another strand, I think, that I'm kind of, my work is moving towards is the general area of just getting your life to work better. I'm working on a book with that kind of general topic, you know, about how to be happier, how to look in the different departments of your life, all in a holistic, connected way, like relationship, money, purpose, meaning. And I'm very interested. I mean, I'm on a journey myself trying to get my life to work better. I found a lot of tools through the whole mind, body, spirit realm, and a lot of things, energy, in the field that you, things that you talk about. And I'm interested in sharing what I find that works for me with other people. So that's kind of a direction I'm moving in. And of course, humor and comedy are valuable tools, you know, especially dealing with the difficult things in life. I think it's always struck me that comedians help us deal with the things we'd rather weren't happening, you know, tragedy, disappointment,
right,
women not thinking we have enough testosterone, you know, the usual, or too much testosterone, you know, or never getting it right amount of testosterone.
That's
we're putting our testosterone in the wrong place, you know. Using it on the wrong bit of them, you know, all the things that are tragic in life. I think comedy is really helpful for coming to terms with, and I think the great comedians do that. Woody Allen is a good example. He sends himself up and we laugh at it, and in laughing we're acknowledging that we've been there too. We've been embarrassed, disappointed, you know, and I think that's very therapeutic.
And it's, you know, you mentioned Woody Allen. Most of the American comedians until the last decade or so were Jewish. And It's very much a part of the Jewish worldview and the Jewish way of dealing with all the tragedies that have occurred for thousands of years to make fun of everything.
I love it. I love Jewish humor. I think Irish humor is very similar to Jewish humor.
Right.
There's a lot of self-deprecation. There's a lot about gender issues and mothers, you know.
Yes. Yes,
I saw one Jewish comedian. He just came on stage, and the way he started his act was, he said, "I've just had major surgery to get my mother off my back." And just the whole audience erupted. I mean, obviously the whole audience wasn't Jewish, but they know about mothers.
Right.
Bless them.
You know. Yeah, there's a similar joke about when to cut the umbilical cord.
Middle age, probably.
Yeah, it has to do with when he gets his doctorate and
or when he becomes a dentist, perhaps.
Right, a dentist or a doctor. the Jewish mother jokes are just fertile ground for every conceivable genre of joke you can imagine. Mm-hmm. You know, and in many ways, it's humor about power struggle.
Mm.
You know,
I love the way they address spirituality in Jewish humor in a very earthy kind of not high flown way. You know, there are a lot of jokes about a Jewish person in trouble and talking to God, you know, and gods kind of offer some kind of deal. And they're in a desperate situation, but they're trying to get a better deal out of God. You know, that I love that. That well, kind of acknowledgement.
Yeah, although Conversation with God is now the name of a book, that having a conversation with God, which usually is an argument, is also quintessentially Jewish and fraught with humorous potential. Tell me more about Irish humor, though. I mean, I grew up in New York City, so there were lots of Irish and Italian. So I've got an overall sense of the differences. But yeah, how would you describe it?
I think one of the things about Irish humor, which I love, is the idea that it's called the crack, you know, in Ireland, and that has, some people in England talk about that now, and the crack is a Gaelic term. It's the collective self-entertainment by a group of people and good humor, and everybody's kind of, it's not like one person dominating it, it's everybody's throwing in a bit of a joke. And I think one of the things about Irish humor is probably more people than in England feel they can do it, they can have a go, everybody's a comedian, especially a town like Belfast. Mm-hmm. And the humor is very dark in Belfast, of course, which is very necessary and therapeutic.
Right.
And so there's this kind of there's this creative use of language. People, you know, maybe like classically in a pub, but not necessarily. And there's this, everybody's throwing in a bit of spontaneous humor, and it's all made up in the moment. And I think that aspect of Irish humor is great. There's a lot of about religion and politics. You know, the Catholic Church is often joked about, you know, in the way that the Jewish religious hierarchy is treated. You know, like rabbi jokes and priest jokes have a lot in common as well. And I think there is a lot of common about being a people that have been rejected and belittled. And have also gone out around, what's the word for going, a diaspora, going out around the world. There's a kind of idea that's been put about that the Irish are the 13th tribe of Israel. You know? Something went wrong.
Well, at this point, there are so many 13th tribes that... And there's lots of scholarly work behind each one of them.
Yes.
So, that's a whole bundle of humor to work with all by itself. So, you know, as you described that group humor, which I know when I was growing up, we had a core group of kids that went through high school and college together, and we did that kind of thing. In some places, it's about being really smart and witty and picking up threads that other people didn't get, and punning in particular, you know, creative use of language. But in other places, it's really aggressive. And the game is, I'm going to say something to you that should crush you, but you need to come back with something even worse.
Yeah.
For people that don't come from that background and don't have any sense of that, and for women, I think, who, if they weren't around it all the time, it looks absolutely cruel. But, you know, the game is, okay, so you took a shot at me, I'm taking a shot at you. Now do something with this. Oh, that was good. Here's another
interesting.
One.
I have some thoughts about that. I've looked a lot at what stand-up comedians do, and I think a lot of these things are kind of, there's a they have counterparts in what comedians do, and I very much enjoy comedians that send themselves up and, you know, can put a put down on a heckler that isn't really bitter and nasty, and that can be enjoyed, that the heckler can enjoy. And I kind of prefer humor that doesn't need to deprecate and doesn't need. I think obviously at a certain level it's fine, But, you know, the kind of humor I like is you know, it might be a competition wittiness, but not to bring down the other person. That would be my kind of ideal, really. I wonder if I could just mention it, just to fill in a bit more of the picture. I have written some serious books, which are part of, like most comedians, I'm a very serious person, really. I'm using humor to try and get through life. And help other people get through life. But I've got a couple of books in the pipeline that may be of interest to people in more serious bent. I've just written a book about Oriental Chinese astrology, actually, Chinese horoscopes book, which is going to be published in the States not so far away now in November, and it's called The Guide to Chinese Horoscopes. And I'm just trying to remember the name of it's coming out from a mainstream publisher in the States. But anyway, these things are all featured on my website if people went there. I'm currently co-author of a book on Pilates, because there's a Pilates instructor who knows all about it, who needed a co-author. And I go to Pilates classes, have done for years, find it very helpful. So I came in as co-author on that. So I do quite a bit of, I've written about 15 books myself, and a handful of others that I'm co-author of. So writing is a big part of what I do, and I think that it's balanced by the more interactive with other people and less isolated activities, such as running workshops and things.
Yeah, the term I use is the gregarious hermit.
Yes, yeah. Is that what you are? You're one of them as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think it's the ideal human. I think humans are meant to be gregarious, but also hermetic, if you like, but not hermetically sealed. You know, that there are people who over-isolate themselves. There are people who cannot bear to be alone. And I think the happy life can include both, really, the ideal life.
And especially if you're doing things that are either spiritually contemplative or a task like writing and other things, you know, which are more intellectual but require focus. In a world full of all the distractions that we've got, you know, and now the distractions are right here in your computer, but, you know, with all the distractions that are available, not being able to have that quiet place where you can focus really means that a whole lot of creative work would not be able to happen. Yeah. So anyone who does creative work does it out of a place of quiet where they can get it going, even if it's an ensemble kind of thing. They've got to start it within themselves and get the gesture, as they would say.
Yes. Well, we're all trying to get our lives to work better, aren't we? And find the tools that suit us, because people are very individual. But I think one of the core ideas that I am beginning to develop is the sense, which is probably in a lot of religion, spirituality, but certainly in Buddhism, the idea that we've all got issues, and we're trying to move forward on those issues. And develop ourselves, improve ourselves, get our lives to work better, be happier. But I think, you know, the idea I'm interested in is that the way we do that is the sense of connectedness to others. So we're interested in our own well-being and that of others. We're interested in making the world a better place for ourselves and for others. And in a way, that's a path in itself. You know, that you know, so some alone practice comes into it. But I think, you know, the real arena for development is interacting. There has to be the interaction with other people, and I think that to me is a core idea. And different people will do it in different ways, but to me, a daily practice which helps me, where I consciously focus on that for an hour a day at the beginning of the day, that's, if I don't do that, you know, I'm not going to have a very good day. Things aren't going to work. People aren't going to be in when I telephone them. I'll feel a bit dissatisfied and so on. So that's the kind of spiritual practice that I've evolved in my kind of Buddhism that helps life to work for me.
And one of the wonderful aspects of Buddhism is that there is that flexibility to create your own practice, at least within some portion of the Buddhist community. that you can figure out what works for you, drawing on the tradition. And as long as you have a practice that you're consistent with, that's respected.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to look like one particular thing. So I want to read a couple more of your little quips from the book Astral Sex to Zen Teabags, an Illustrated New Age Spoofopedia. Since my work is doing clearing, most of it buildings and land, ley lines are a big part of what I work with, and it's spelled L-E-Y lines. Your definition of L-A-Y lines is the mystical patterns found in bed linen after sexual activity, which, let me tell you, got gales of laughter when I read it to my partner.
Well, that's appropriate, isn't it? You know, they say the best way, you know, it may not apply to you, you're there already, best way to get somebody into bed is through laughter, isn't it? But I do love the way, you know, people can find all kinds of interpretations of stuff, you know, readings of not just tea leaves, but anything that happens can be construed as an indicator of the future. And there can be a real delegation, is it, of responsibility for our lives. I think that's what some new agey people do that I think is a mistake, to say, to not take responsibility, you know, whenever things go wrong, you know, to write it off has nothing to do with yourself, and just think, I'll do an affirmation. Instead of doing something about it, I'll make an affirmation.
Right.
I think that's, you know, one of the things is that, that's what I'm sending up, one of the things, reading patterns to find a significance. It might be just a mess on your bed, you know.
Well, and that's a whole kind of longer conversation about what intuition is and what guidance is, because you can get information from anything. It's part of the way that shamans function in the world, is listening to everything and trying to figure out what, because it's all coming from inside you anyway. You're just manifesting it out, and you're trying to figure out what you're trying to tell yourself. So one more is the definition of Montessori, a radical system of education noticed for its emphasis on spontaneity, freedom of expression, discovery, and uncovering a potential, shockingly exposed in the movie The Full Montessori. We were on the floor with that one.
Do you the full movie, The Full Monty, was that?
Oh yeah.
Was that successful in the States?
Oh yes. Oh yes. Yeah. It was very successful, and you know, it's still watched a lot on Netflix and that kind of thing. And one last one, which cracked me up completely, because I have friends who are in mystery schools, and your definition was spot on. Your definition of mystery schools is, we can't tell you what that is, obviously.
It's a bit of a cheap joke, isn't it? But, you know.
But it's exactly true.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly true.
And it's very interesting to hear, David, the bits you like from the book, because I it's great to get feedback from readers, because I'm here in my office writing stuff. I'm hoping that people will enjoy what I enjoy. And it's really great to get feedback and to hear what you as an individual like. It's just different from what other people like. So thank you very much for that.
My pleasure. And, you know, I haven't done the book justice. I'm going to continue reading it and laughing with it. And, you know, for my part, it's the wittiness and the short ones that get me, but that's just my kind of humor. You have some longer pieces in here which are just hysterical. So, yes, I enjoy it thoroughly. And part of that is because it's a different kind of wittiness and wordplay. So the surprise in the way that you do it compared to the way I do it, the way the people I grew up with do it, is really delightful. It's a lot
Thank
of fun.
You very much.
My pleasure. So let's make sure people know where to find you again. Want to give your website information one more time?
Yeah. So Jerry Maguire Thompson, Jerry with a G, .com, or positivecomedy.com. If you can get either one of those websites successfully, in your browser, they lead to each other, and they have contact sheets, Twitter, Facebook links, all the social media stuff that we're supposed to do these days that I don't really do very well. I'm supposed to tweet every day, and I'm not very good at that, but I'm learning.
Well, we can friend each other on Facebook, and I'll tell you some of the tricks and secrets I've learned with that.
Yeah. Do you know how to unlike people? I think that would be a great thing to do. What a great word. Unfriend. It's unfriending. I don't think you can unlike them, but you can probably unfriend them.
Right. You can unfriend people, or you can unsubscribe from their posts, which is more subtle. You know, you're still my friend, but I'm not listening to you.
They should have a dislike button. You know,
well, there used to be an unlike or dislike button, and they took it off.
Because people didn't like it.
You know, I had to give you that straight line, Jerry.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for being on the show with us. Jerry Thompson, an Irishman from the UK, is an author. The book that we were talking about, at least the one that I've been laughing about, is Astral Sex to Zen Teabags, an illustrated New Age spoofopedia. In the tradition of what Mark Twain would say is sacred cows making the best hamburger, just shredding all of it. So have had a wonderful time, Jerry. Thanks so much for being on the show and for working out the timing details, because there's a lot of – the other side of the pond is a long ways away.
Yep.
Hours and hours. Well, thank you so much. For people that are curious about my work, I do clearing of real estate, people, and land, and you can get the information on househealing.com. And hiding on the contact page, you will find every conceivable technology to get in touch with me, including a link to my scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute assessment and reading to give you an idea of what I see is going on in your situation and whether my work will be helpful to you. And you can go on, schedule an appointment that way, and we get rid of all the phone tag and email tag, which is quite wonderful. I love doing that. So wanted to just bring us back around to what I was saying at the beginning. There are all these mysterious things in life, and we look at them and go, why does everybody do that? Or why does this person do that? Or why? And we don't look at it frequently from a perspective of there must be some underlying reason that we're not paying attention to. And when I hear somebody talk about the biology and the evolutionary meaning of some simple social thing that we see all the time, it really blows me away. Obviously, this whole thing about testosterone is fodder for all kinds of jokes, and I will definitely be playing with that. But in addition to that, it just explains so much and gives us more insight into how life works. So until next week, when I don't have any idea what I'm doing next week, do I? But I'm often confused. But I do know that this is David Franklin Farkas, and this is The Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio, and I will be back next Thursday, and we will have more fun. So stay with us. Come on back.